Hello and thank you for tuning into Sideline Story, your destination for sports news, analysis and discussions. I'm your host Brandon Yates, and with me as always are my phenomenal co-hosts Yang Guang and Tianyu. And today we are back onto our favourite topic, gents. We're talking football, and man, it has been, as has been described on social media, absolute cinema. What we've seen over the course of the first leg of Champions League quarterfinals has been absolutely sensational. We've seen goals, we've seen drama, we've seen outstanding individual and team performances. We've seen some surprises as well, both good and bad. So I can't really think of a time recently where Champions League quarterfinal action has been this thrilling, particularly from a neutral point of view. I'm sure for some of the managers and the fans of these clubs, and obviously the players themselves, it's been very dramatic and stressful just because of the amount of goals that are going in. Like, I wouldn't want to be a manager or a goalkeeper in the last week or so. But man, from a neutral point of view and just from an advertisement for the Champions League, I don't think it could get any better than this. But Yang Guang, let's start with probably the biggest fixture that I think everyone was looking forward to, which was the clash between Manchester City and Real Madrid. And we just have seen in the past in the Champions League just some incredibly varied performances from both teams. From my side of things, I'm always kind of surprised by the performances that Real Madrid put in, because when I look at them on paper, they definitely, I think, lack quality that they've had in the past in certain areas. But I think they just have this belief that the Champions League is their competition, and they seem to bring out their best performances in this competition. And we saw a 3-3 draw with a very strong Manchester City side. And, you know, what did you make of that performance? I mean, should City and Madrid be happy considering it was a high-scoring clash? And do Madrid have a chance of potentially getting through to the next stage, considering that 4-0 loss that they suffered at the Etihad, I believe it was last season, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of variables to get into.
Yeah, it's definitely a fascinating game to watch. Perhaps the best Champions League game so far this season. Both teams offer their best attacking performances. I think City should be happy leaving Bernabeu with the draw, because the game was, for the most of time, 50-50.
Yeah.
Like what Guardiola said, City didn't control the game. Their defense was exposed several times, and none of their goal was a typical Guardiola-styled score.
Yeah, it was more like individual brilliance. Because, like, for example, that Foden goal. But I think that's something that City needs to be aware of, even returning home, is just how vulnerable they are to Real Madrid's counter-attacking threat.
Yeah, Real really made City players uncomfortable, especially Erling Haaland.
Yeah,
he played a terrible game, almost invisible. I noticed the Chinese
fan... He was in Rudiger's pocket.
I noticed the Chinese fan said on social media, jokingly commented that he said, "I know it's a very important game, but why didn't Guardiola play Haaland on the pitch?"
He was a ghost out there. It's confusing, because I think there has been a question mark around Haaland recently, but particularly in this season, about when he is heavily marked or when he does play in big games. He does seem to kind of fall out of the equation and get lost out there. And also, Roy Keane famously said this season he has the ball-playing ability of a League Two player, which Guardiola defended. But, I mean, there is some kind of reality to that. But that being said, when you have that ability to score goals like he does, your ball-playing ability doesn't really matter. And especially when you're surrounded by so many of the best midfielders in the world. Kevin De Bruyne, Phil Foden, Bernardo Silva. So just the quality that City have around Haaland, I think even when Haaland isn't playing, or when he is like a ghost on the field, it doesn't seem to affect City that much, because then you get the likes of Silva and Foden just putting in these banger goals. What Haaland does, even when he's not scoring goals, is just create space for these phenomenal midfielders that City have.
Yeah, but another Chinese fan said, after the game, Haaland returned home and found out Rudiger was still following him.
following him in his Lamborghini on the way home, yeah.
And Haaland would be like, "Hey, dude, what you doing? I'm home." And
I could picture Rudiger in his Lamborghini behind like Haaland's Bentley, let's say, and Rudiger has his head out the window like this, watching him as he steers
with the smile.
And with the Ancelotti raised eyebrow, I'm coming for you, boy.
Yeah, and at the doorstep, Rudiger would be like, I know, dude. Ancelotti told me not to lose sight of you the whole night. You got the extra bed?
Got into bed? No, he got into bed with him and cuddled with him. Yeah, but I mean, but that, again, was an issue for Haaland, but I don't necessarily think it was an issue for City.
Yeah, I think especially for the Phil Foden goal, Haaland played a role, actually. Yeah. He attracted defense, especially Rudiger, to his position and opened an area for Phil Foden to score that fantastic goal.
Mm.
I mean, Rudiger was just part of the reason why Real could keep Haaland quiet. But meantime, it seems like only De Bruyne can activate Haaland.
Mm.
Other teammates are better at putting him to bed.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I think Real would regret not winning this one because things would be way tougher when it switches to Manchester. The absence of Tchouaméni and De Bruyne's return, it would be a loss and gain situation in the battle around midfield. So things are looking positive on the City side.
Yeah.
Real may not surrender that easily like last season's big flop, but I can see City is gaining momentum, especially considering they are the defending champions. That fact really changed the mentality of this team when they step back to the Champions League. It's like, I did it once, I can do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And just returning to the Etihad, Tianyu, do you think Madrid have a chance of pulling off a result at the Etihad?
Well, yeah, but as a Real Madrid fan, I'm really disappointed, actually, at the result of this game, because I was expecting the team to take advantage of City's injury situation and score as many goals as possible.
I mean, three's not bad, to be fair.
Yeah, but still not a win, right?
Yeah.
When it turned out that Real missed out on so many very good opportunities. Like in the first half, some of Rodrigo's shots could have been better. And City, on the contrary, took their chances and created some beautiful goals, like the ones by Phil Foden and
Guardiola.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know how created those goals were in terms of Guardiola football, like we were talking about earlier. I think it was just moments of individual brilliance, which is still fantastic. But it also means that there are things that Madrid can do and continue to do, returning to the Etihad, that can still see them go through and not just completely capitulate like that they did with that 4-0 results last time out.
Yeah, there are a couple of players in Real Madrid I want to talk about who have not performed really well from my point of view in the game. First of all, unexpectedly, was Jude Bellingham. He seemed to be at a loss for what to do in that game. I guess part of this situation can be explained by his recent injury, but essentially, I think he's not ready for playing as a forward. He's really playing like in an awkward situation in that position.
Do you think he was nervous?
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So I think in this Madrid team, in the Champions League, which is seen as Real Madrid's competition and all of the expectation for not just midfield dominance, but for scoring goals and just for leading that Madrid through to the next round, I think there's a lot of pressure to put onto the 20-year-old. Yeah. But just looking at Madrid going to the Etihad, what can they do to kind of tighten up and give themselves a better chance of getting a result at the Etihad?
First of all, I would really like to see a change on Bellingham's role on the pitch, because in La Liga, we saw him scoring numerous goals in the box as kind of a shadow striker.
Like a false nine.
But teams in La Liga generally don't have tall, strong defenders like City do. Ruben Dias and John Stones. His struggle also rendered Real Madrid in an awkward situation where, as Rodrigo and Vinicius push the ball into the left front, nobody's in the box to coordinate with them. And in terms of defense, we didn't see Bellingham making any big contributions to the team either in that game. So I would say he really lost his form in that game. And hopefully next game, we could see some changes to his role on the pitch. Maybe
That's exactly right, his role. And I think that's down to Ancelotti as well. I think for this level of opposition, Bellingham, all players, I think, actually at Real Madrid need to have a very defined, specific role. And I think that's going to be very important when they return to the Etihad, is to give their star players, I think of Vinicius and Bellingham, a very defined role and task to perform. And that will also determine what the other lesser players need to do to support those roles.
And also, there's another player who has been doing terrible in that game that I really, really need to mention.
You are really critical of this Real squad.
Because that's a Real Madrid fan.
Look,
you know?
I mean, even though they scored three goals, you know, conceding three goals at the Bernabeu is a no-no.
Real Madrid fans are always like this. Real picky about the team's performance. And that man, by the way, was Tchouaméni. I really had high expectations for him.
He's young. He's been in and out of the team. Yeah. You know, it's a lot. It's a lot to expect from somebody.
Yeah, but when he first came to the team, I really had high expectations for him because I was hoping that he could replace the role of Casemiro, you know, doing all the dirty work, the defense work. But the truth is that he's not fit for the position of a defensive midfielder.
Right now? Because I still
any highlights
but
from
he's
him.
Such a quality player, though. I think, I mean...
He's got a strong body, though.
If you look at what he's done for France, I think there's a lot of quality in that player, and he is still very young. So I think he still has a lot to offer, but maybe that's not the role that best fits him.
That's only two seasons. Yeah, but when Militao got injured and Ancelotti changed his position to a centre-back... I still don't see any highlights from his performance. Maybe he was just
It's a little bit harsh to judge somebody playing out of position.
Yeah, he was just changed his position. Yeah. But the unnecessary foul to Grealish in the opening game was really disaster. Was a foolish considering he already got one yellow card on him. And
we must remember though, Jack Grealish is the most fouled player in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's true. So he's like a magnet to fouls.
He's very difficult. I mean, it's like a huge part of his game is drawing fouls. So you know, to be fair, Tchouaméni
his responsibility, right?
He literally, so he literally fell for like Jack Grealish's, you know, most key element of his game. So.
Yeah.
I feel like you're being a little bit harsh to your players, but I understand. Like I think the players that you've mentioned in particular could have done more.
Yeah.
But I mean, speaking of teams that have been having shockers recently, Bayern Munich and the Bundesliga have been absolutely terrible. But man, Yang Guang, they've really stepped up in the Champions League. I mean, I can kind of answer this question myself. Are they a different team in the Champions League? Yes, because particularly this season, I think that the Bundesliga title is gone. So it makes sense that Bayern are only going to be focusing on the Champions League. And they've got so many players that are experienced in that competition. So to have all of that experience focusing on one competition... It's a pretty unique situation that Bayern find themselves in compared to the other teams that are playing that might also have an eye on domestic titles.
Yeah. It looks like Bayern now is a team that is able to deliver a really high-level performance, but they don't know how to make it consistent, especially in the domestic matches. That's why they give away the Bundesliga title. Congratulations to Leverkusen, by the way.
But I also think that is a statement on either Tuchel's managing of the dressing room or the professionalism of the players. Because it's clear that they have the abilities and they have the experience to do great things. But to do it on a consistent basis requires a very high level of professionalism or having a manager that can bring out those performances from players on a regular basis.
We talked about this so much. Tuchel is the run coach to manage this Bayern squad. And it seems like he's losing control of the locker room right
I think
now.
He's lost it already. Yeah. It's gone. And I think a lot of what we've seen from Bayern at this point in the Champions League has nothing to do with him.
Yeah, but still, Bayern is Bayern. For one particular match, they are capable of beating any team on this planet.
They have some of the best players in the world. I mean, if I think of the wingers, I think of... Leroy Sané, Kingsley Coman, those are guys that have been there and done it. Coman is a World Cup winner. Sané is one of the best left-footed players in the world, and they've got the best striker in the world. So if they do turn up on a day, they can beat, like you said, any team.
Yeah. There's an old saying in ancient Chinese military literature, art of war, do not...
Sang Tzu. I don't know if you guys know this, but that's a very... probably one of the most famous works of Chinese literature globally. It's been translated into English and is read... all over the world.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a very, very famous book.
Mm. And there's a saying, do not press an enemy at bay. I think Bayern is at bay now, at this stage.
So Arsenal kind of woke a sleeping giant, sounds like, by the sounds of things.
Yeah, Champions League is their only title hope this season. Yeah. When you keep such an opponent at corner, the energy they generate would be multiplied.
Yeah.
I think Arteta should read more Chinese military classics. It might help because you, at
every manager,
at this stage, do not try to dominate Bayern. because they will fight harder than expect. Bayern bites.
But with that, and Bayern did bite, but I think what was unique about Bayern and Arsenal's approach is that Arsenal did dominate, in my opinion, for large parts of the game, and they scored goals and they played really well and they stuck to their guns. They made two errors and it led to two goals for Bayern. So I think that was something that was kind of almost out of Arsenal and Arteta's control. Any team is going to make errors, but I don't think they expected that Bayern would pounce on the only, literally the only two errors that I could see that Arsenal made. And a game that it looked like Arsenal were going to convincingly win was taken away from them. And now they have to go to the Allianz Arena and try and put together some performance, which I don't think they'll do. So I think while I agree with you, you do need to be aware of that dormant opposition side of things. In terms of what Arsenal did, it worked for them, but they only made two errors and that cost them. So is that Arsenal's fault or was that just a credit to Bayern's brilliance?
I think both.
Yeah.
Arsenal made not two errors, many errors. We will touch on that later. But meantime, Bayern is a team that, especially with Harry Kane on the team, you don't make mistakes against such a team. I think Bayern just showed they can grasp the opportunity they offered at the right time, at the right place.
Mm. And I think it's a unique situation for them that's weirdly benefiting them just in this competition because, like I said, all of their focus is on that competition.
Yeah,
and it's so easy to find inspiration and your best performance when you're playing at this level against that quality opposition. There's no need for them to find inspiration or to find a dynamic performance because this is what they've dreamed of. This is what they want to achieve. That's why players join Bayern. It's not to win the Bundesliga, it's to win the Champions League. Now that all of their focus is on that competition, I think Bayern are unexpectedly going to be a big danger as this tournament progresses, and I'd be very surprised if Arsenal can topple them at the Allianz Arena. I really don't see it. And speaking of Arsenal, Tianyu, do you think that their lack of participation in the Champions League led to nerves in their performance against Bayern?
I actually think that the Gunners have been playing quite well for their side. Yeah, they haven't played in a stage of the Champions League for a long time, and they're having a lot of pressure from the domestic league schedule. But even though Bayern did find some great opportunities through their counterattacks, Arsenal still kept their formations really well and played very aggressively when Bayern was controlling the ball.
And what I was impressed by was that they didn't change the way they play in the Premier League, which has brought them so much success this season against possibly one of the toughest opponents they've faced this year in a competition that they've been out of for so long.
Yeah, they kept doing what they
stuck to their guns.
Yeah, stuck to their guns. They
irony, the Gunners stuck to their guns.
But for one or two moments, I can tell they were a little bit anxious and even nervous.
Yeah.
I mean, Gabriel stupidly touched the ball with his hands after the goalkeeper passed him the ball. I mean, what was that?
Yeah, it was weird.
Even my grandma knows you can't
you don't
do that.
Do that.
I think Arsenal should feel very lucky the referee didn't look into that action. I think it also took the referee by surprise.
And Tuchel was furious about it, right? In post-match comments, he was
Harry Kane complained about it for 20 seconds about it.
Yeah.
I think the ref would be like, wait, did he just... No way. It's the Champions League.
The ref thought he was dreaming.
Yeah. The highest level of athletes, no one would make such simple mistakes.
But again, at the end of the day, these high-level athletes, they're human beings, you know? Yeah. We put them on such a pedestal. But in a competition like that, in a moment like that, you know, that pressure can really break even the highest level athletes.
More details, Saliba's reckless tackle on Sané and Saka's intentional contact with Neuer near the end of the game. I mean, he could have shot it in the one-on-one situation, but instead he went for Neuer's leg and looked for a penalty. It's not Arsenal we've seen in the Premier League. They lacked confidence and played with hesitation for some moments.
I don't know if that's necessarily nerves. I just think it's high-quality attacking talent taking opposition of an area of Arsenal's setup that is their weak point. And to have a weak point of defense against that level of quality and experienced attack, that can be a huge problem, especially now when they go to the Allianz Arena. But now when we look at PSG and Mbappe, Yang Guang, there's so much speculation about Mbappe's future. And at this point, I'm pretty much certain that Mbappe is going to leave and will most likely join Real Madrid. And with that in mind, it's still interesting to me that Luis Enrique and PSG are putting so much emphasis on relying on Mbappe to carry that team. But has this speculation, I say in inverted commas speculation because I think it's a done deal, around Mbappe's future affected their Champions League performances, and were Barcelona able to take advantage of that?
To some extent, I think so. I don't know if this has impacted his teammates or not, because PSG as a package wasn't that bad.
No, they weren't.
In recent Champions League games.
Or even in that game against Barca, I think they still, it was still a pretty solid performance, but it seemed like Xavi got his substitutions right, and I think a couple of unknown Barca players also performed incredibly well.
Unknown Barca players.
Yeah, no, like there were guys that came off
the
bench.
What's the last time we called Barca players unknown?
But that's what's interesting about what Barca's doing right now, because of their financial situation, there's so many youngsters that are coming through.
I agree.
And I mean,
they're very talented.
There's a couple of guys that I'd never heard of before this game that came on and delivered really exceptional performances. Yeah. I mean, even in this podcast, I can't remember some of the names of the guys that had an impact on defeating a PSG team that has, you know, the likes of Vitinha and Mbappe and some really talented players.
But, I mean, for that particular match, Mbappe was rather quiet in the first leg against the Barcelona. Chinese fans said that the week's Champions League should be themed The Lost Stars.
Haaland, Bellingham, and now
Mbappe, arguably the best three footballers now in the world.
But the weird thing about Mbappe, it just also seemed like he was making the wrong decisions. And he was struggling to beat players, which he normally doesn't do. I think he had zero shots on target in this game. So even if you're off your game, to be that off your game is quite strange at this level. But that being said, I mean, besides maybe Dembele, did Barcelona have any other PSG players that they really needed to keep an eye on? I don't necessarily think so. So I think maybe Mbappe was also utilized in the wrong way and was targeted by Barca's defenders. So I think it might just be a lot of factors that are also playing against Mbappe right now.
Remember how Mbappe played against Argentina in the World Cup final? He was targeted. I don't think...
But look at the quality he has around him, though, in that French team compared to this PSG team.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah, but I agree. Like, I think even when world-class players are targeted, they should have the ability to deal with that.
Yeah.
To me, Mbappe's underwhelming performance was more from his own side rather than the opponent's defense. He's like reserving something from the pitch, totally different compared to Mbappe in the World Cup final. Not even close. So I guess his future plan, his next stop of the playing career, those kind of things have held him back a little bit.
But that being said, it's still the quarterfinal of the Champions League. Even if you are leaving next season, surely you're thinking, I'm in the Champions League right now. I'm in the quarterfinals right now. And what an amazing way to leave Paris as well, if he is leaving, is to lift the trophy with them for the first time. So I would be surprised if motivation is his problem. Or distractions, because if I was a professional footballer, even if I knew I was leaving the next season to join my dream club, nothing would distract me from a Champions League quarterfinal.
That just kind of reminded me of a Bayern player.
Yeah, Alphonso Davies.
After,
and he's also supposedly going to Madrid.
Yeah. After rumors came that
Why is everyone going to Madrid?
Well, I mean, that question answers itself. It's Real Madrid.
Yeah, it's Real Madrid. He also seemed to be like, got distracted from the game and was not himself during the game.
It's a group stage game, I get it. But it's the quarterfinals of the Champions League. You're leaving for Real Madrid, which is the dream move, but you're still playing for Bayern Munich or PSG. Nothing would distract me from putting on the best possible performance to impress my future employers, number one. And number two, you've still got a chance of lifting the Champions League before leaving. Again, like, I'm sure they do have one eye on their future move. And, you know, I also think of the likes of the movie like Goal 2, you know. I mean, that film was a great example of how, as fans, we don't know what's going on with these guys off the pitch. They might be dealing with family issues. They might be dealing with alcohol abuse. They might be dealing with a girlfriend that's cheating on them. They might be dealing... You know what I mean? There's so many things that we aren't aware of. So maybe these guys do have an eye on their future move, but who knows what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
Maybe Mbappe had an off night. I think there's still a lot to be seen from the likes of Davies, Bayern Munich, PSG, Mbappe in future games. And thankfully for them, they've got a second leg to look forward to, and we've all got second legs to look forward to, because I don't think there's any defined result at this point. I think there's still all to play for in the second leg, so that's going to be very exciting to watch. But I think of the likes of Mbappe and Haaland in particular, I think those are going to be players that we are going to potentially see improved performances from. But that is all we have time for on this week's episode of Sideline Story. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, we will be back next week with our latest topic, and we'll see you then.